now call the meeting of the House Committee on Rules to order for Monday, June 26, 2017. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2020A.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2020A renames State Department of Energy the Oregon Department of Energy and Climate and modifies duties to include collect, compile, and analyze energy data and serve as central repository for energy and climate information to which all agencies shall send energy and climate-related research, monitor energy industry research and developments, track and evaluate information that will aid in achievement of Oregon's greenhouse gas emissions reduction goals, and provide support to boards and commissions. It establishes the Oregon Energy and Climate Board as oversight and advisory body for the Oregon Department of Energy and Climate. It specifies the membership of the committee. It requires the board advise the department on implementation, administration, and enforcement of the department's programs and activities, development of policies and budget preparation forms. It establishes the Interagency Climate Coordinating Committee, comprised of specific members, primarily comprised of ex officio directors from a variety of state departments. It requires the committee to identify, evaluate, and make recommendations to board on ways to coordinate state policies and programs related to energy and climate. You have a dash A8 amendment. It clarifies the department and the Pacific Northwest Energy Power and Conservation Planning Council members of the board are non-voting. It increases the size of the board to 7 members with the addition of 2 at-large members. It specifies that only voting members may be chair or vice chair, and majority of the voting members constitutes quorum. It creates a 9-member Energy Industry Advisory Committee appointed by the board and supported by the department. The board consists of 2 representatives of the electric investor-owned utilities, 1 representative of natural gas investor-owned utility, 2 representatives of consumer-owned utilities, 1 representative of interests of renewable energy developers, 1 representative of interests of energy efficiency contractors, and 2 at-large members. The committee is charged with providing information and recommendations to board on energy production, distribution, utilization, including energy trends, energy portfolio resources, and energy infrastructure resilience, and proposals by the department related to planning, policy, and technical analysis. It does specify requirements for selecting a chair and vice chair, quorum, and meeting frequency. It adds director of Oregon Health Authority to the committee and amends charge of committee to include development and recommendations of strategies and funding resources for programs, activities, and projects that may mitigate and adapt to impacts of climate change. We do not have the fiscal on the A8 amendment, Madam Chair. We do have the revenue. However, the underlying measure does have a need to go to Ways and Means. The A8 will not change that. So the recommendation from the committee today will be to send it to Ways and Means with whatever the committee recommends.
All right, Representative Polby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate just a moment to kind of lay out how we got to this bill. House Bill 2020 was a bill I sponsored, which came out of a discussion during the interim in December of 2015. The Senate President and the Speaker of the House appointed an interim committee on the Department of Energy oversight. And I was co-chair of that along with Senator Beyer, and we proceeded to go walk through the department's programs pretty thoroughly, had public hearings at almost all of those 10 meetings throughout the year where we looked at that. And the culmination of this work was to come back with recommendations on what to do with the Department of Energy. So having said that, there was no consensus on the recommendations, though the co-chair and I did produce a draft co-chair report, actually 2 of them, and this bill's based on that first one, which was dated October 31st. One of the things that we really saw and we all agreed to on the committee was we needed a Department of Energy, and we all agreed that they would be well served to have a board for oversight and particularly also to make recommendations to the legislature on energy policy. We went a little bit further in trying to understand the mission of the department and understanding the connection between our renewable portfolio standard, the importance of that, and some of its purposes, one of which was to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which should be part of the discussion in determining energy policy going further. So this bill is really designed to make sure that we have proper oversight over the Department of Energy, but also to have the ability of the agency to gather the information, the data, to provide us with an analysis, and also to provide the legislature with policy recommendations on how we deal with energy and climate issues going forward. Became apparent that many of the department's programs have, you know, had some legacy problems, some of which were internal to people in the agency, but also the lack of oversight and the lack of sideboards and the lack of direction from the legislature in telling the Department of Energy what their goals were, how they would achieve those goals. And so this bill is meant to bring the Department of Energy into the 21st century, being able to look at all of those that information and to provide those recommendations to us, the legislature, and to the governor's office. We clearly decided that in the realm of climate and energy, many of our agencies have a lot of programs around climate. I think there's 10 different climate programs within different agencies, all of which are siloed, that don't have any coordination as to what metrics they use to measure those programs. And we also have a lot of work on analysis around climate that's been done by the Global Warming Commission, with a lack of resources and no real statutory direction on what we're supposed to be doing with the information that they present. So this bill's meant to address that. It also gives some a direction for the energy industry to provide input by creating a board for it alongside of that interagency group. So I support the Dash 8 amendment going into this bill, and thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We'll call up the first panel, Alan, Angela, and Janice.
Ladies first.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Angela Crowley Cook. I'm the Legislative Director at Oregon Environmental Council. We strongly support House Bill 2020 and the, Dash 8. Thank you. Amendment. And this is because climate change has been identified as a national security threat by the Pentagon. The World Health Organization calls it one of the greatest threats to public health. Faith leaders, including our Pope, who issued the first ever climate encyclical, have made a moral call to action. The state of Oregon has also recognized climate change as a threat and set reduction targets in statute in 2007. But despite the enormity of the challenge, Oregon is depending on volunteer capacity through the Oregon Global Warming Commission to take stock of Oregon's efforts, undertake new analysis, and make recommendations for charting a path forward. For a problem of this magnitude, Oregon needs to dedicate resources. Oregon needs a strong state energy department that has an expanded mission to include climate change. So we support the underlying bill and the clear governance structure in the Dash 8 amendments, which includes the addition of the Climate and Energy Board and the two at-large members added in the Dash 8. We hope that there will be additional climate expertise with those two at-large members. OEC believes it is critical that the agency always factors in the costs of climate inaction, the benefits of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and that analysis be anchored in the deep emissions reductions needed to secure the science-based 2050 targets and beyond that. So in sum, to achieve Oregon's energy and climate goals, we urge a yes vote on House Bill 2020. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Janice Thompson, Advocacy Director with the Oregon Citizens Utility Board, or CUB. CUB strongly supports House Bill 2020 with the Dash 8 amendments. We're a statewide advocacy group for residential utility customers. It was created by ballot measure back in 1984. First, some targeted comments related to the Oregon Energy and Climate Board composition and function. Provision 4 in Section 3 achieves a very important good governance goal of avoiding undue conflicts of interest, so that's very important. The provision 3C in Section 3 focuses, identifies the need for residential energy users to be represented. So that's a highlight. I just want to highlight that representing everyday Oregonians is a critical element to this bill's composition in that regard. Shifting to function, CUB does think that the bill gets it right and that the Oregon Energy and Climate Board would operate in an advisory and oversight role. So those are some targeted comments. And from a bigger picture sense, my current work at CUB actually represents a return to the energy arena since my first job, actually out of college, was with the Minnesota Energy Agency. My interest in energy then and now is linked to the integral role that energy use plays in parallel, interconnected economic, public health, and environmental arenas. Those interconnections have only become clearer over time due to climate change. And so specifying the climate issues that need to be addressed in this kind of comprehensive restructuring of the currently the Oregon Department of Energy is of utmost importance. In terms of the Dash 8 amendments, setting up a Energy Industry Advisory Committee is supported by CUB. It actually highlights that, you know, different energy sectors are going to come at this issue from different angles. But quite frankly, I think it actually also illustrates the importance of clearly identifying climate change as a function of this restructured agency, because it just highlights the importance of energy in dealing with climate change issues. Regarding the Dash 7's amendments, that just seems inappropriately broad, and as I understand it, is addressed by the Dash 8 amendment. So to circle back, CUB supports and urges a yes vote on House Bill 2020 with the Dash 8 amendments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Alan Zelenka. I'm a Eugene City Councilor and a member of the Oregon Global Warming Commission, although appointed by the governor, although I'm not speaking on their behalf. And I also have been an energy professional for over 30 years. My first job after college, too, but I never left. I come to you today to provide testimony in support of HB 2020, seeking the creation of the Oregon Department of Energy and Climate. And as you may have noticed, Eugene Mayor Lucy Vinnis provided written testimony on this bill, and I'll echo her remarks. I want to first clearly state to the record that the City of Eugene is committed to addressing global climate change and strongly supports the passage of implementation of greenhouse gas emission reduction legislation in Oregon. Local governments and communities, while leading the way, cannot address the challenge of climate change without state leadership and coordinated action. Eugene has taken great strides starting in 2010 with the development of our Climate and Energy Action Plan, followed by the adoption of our Climate Recovery Ordinance in 2014 that I was the author of, and which made Eugene the first city in the country to actually put our laws into our climate change, our climate reduction law targets into law and require a plan to meet those targets. And then we updated our climate recovery ordinance in 2016, creating a new goal based on climate science that establishes a target reduction of 7.6% annually from our 2010 goals. So while all this policy work and action planning is leading edge, it's only a portion of the full puzzle. In 2017, the Oregon Global Warming Commission report that was given by the commission indicated that Oregon won't reach its greenhouse gas reduction goals, and with the planned actions that we have. It states that Oregon's warming with notable consequences, and the state's current policy efforts are insufficient to address these challenges that are ahead of us. Local officials are taking a stand and providing leadership to communities which we serve, and these policy decisions are not taken lightly. Taking action in support of 2020 really isn't that far of a political leap, I believe. While there are voices that decry the need for action, the majority of Oregonians are in favor of public agencies taking a stand on climate change. For instance, our community recognizes the need to take immediate action. And in a recent survey, 75% of Eugene residents agreed that stronger regulations on greenhouse gas emissions are needed. Supportive state policies provides a central complementary platform for that local action, and it's time for Oregon legislature to take a comprehensive economy-wide action to address climate change. You might also ask why a member of the Oregon Global Warming Commission would be up here advocating for a bill that does away with our commission. Good question. I support it because I think it's good for the climate. It institutionalized climate change with a powerful organization and a state agency. It's good for energy efficiency and renewables and energy development, and it's good for our economy. The actions that we will take as a result of a plan that still needs to be created with specific actions in Oregon will boost our economy as it's done across the country, and especially in California. With regard to the amendments, we support the addition of the two positions to the board that represent the public interest. Also that it require a annual report, as the Oregon Global Warming Commission does today, to the legislature on the status of global meeting the goals, statewide goals, and puts the new board in charge of climate change benchmarks for the state agencies, and empowers that board with asking the state agencies if they are or are not meeting those benchmarks. And right now, that accountability mechanism is missing within the Oregon Global Warming Commission. I think that would be a good add to this legislature. So on behalf of our community, I thank you for your service, and I urge you to pass HB 2020.
Any questions? Yeah, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. I, too, served on the Department of Energy Oversight, and I've got to say I'm a bit confused. So can you talk to me a little bit about the makeup of this board? I don't remember ever having any conversation about there being any global warming folks needed. In fact, in looking back at my notes, we talked about having an economist, possibly having somebody from higher ed serve on a board that had to do with energy and climate. We had maybe possibly someone representing the residential energy users, commercial energy users, someone in the transportation sector, a member of the Power and Conservation Council. But I don't have anything indicating that we would have ever gone this direction. So I'm trying to wrap my head around the purpose behind taking the Department of Energy and now layering it, a department that was struggling extremely. I mean, I could go through pages and pages of my notes on issues, and now we're going to layer them again with yet something else, and I'm trying to understand the piece of the global warming that has to do with the Department of Energy that falls within some of the things that I've just outlined that we talked about in the oversight. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, sure. Certainly, Representative Hack.
Thank you.
The two things that I think that we're advocating for are adding two members to the board that are representative of the public interest and allows the governor to have some flexibility on who gets appointed. It's not necessarily a global warming slot, but it is a public interest slot. And then secondly, the Interagency Climate Coordinating Committee, which is actually an interstate agency group that would include all of the main state agencies, as well as the Department of Land Conservation and Development. It's really important to have all of those state agencies coordinate their actions, because climate change and energy both go across all of the sectors. One of the reasons I like being in the energy business is that no matter who I talk to, we use energy. And energy and climate change go hand in glove. So when you having that coordination among all of the different state agencies is critically important. One of the things that's lacking in particular at the Global Warming Commission is that accountability mechanism to ask the agencies if they are meeting their benchmarks, and if not, why not? And I think that would be a very good add to the piece of legislation.
I have a follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So if the Global Warming Commission is struggling with accountability, the Department of Energy has clearly struggled with accountability, how then would it be prudent to merge those two together and expect to have a better result?
The reason the Global Warming Commission struggles with accountability because it's not authorized to do that. It has no authority to ask the state agencies as a body to whether or not they're meeting their benchmarks. The most we can do is we voluntarily, what the Global Warming Commission does is give a report card on whether or not they are, but the agencies have no responsibility to respond to that. And in the absence of an actual authority and a requirement that a state agency do that, having worked with them for many, many years, all of the things that are required take first precedence, and all the things that are nice to do and don't have to take second priority. So that accountability mechanism sometimes gets left behind. And so that's why we've been, for years, actually, on the Global Warming Commission, have been asking for that kind of accountability authority.
I'll
and I think that's good for this board as well.
Comments, so we get further in. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I heard the term factor in climate inaction. And so the question is, what if we did nothing? And then when we talk about greenhouse reduction goals, what is the cost of those goals? And what are we buying? What's the value? And what do we get for what we spend? It seems that, you know, if you Google this issue, you get about the same number of people that say there's not an issue as those that say the sky's falling. And so when we say we're gonna address this, and Oregon is going to save the world in this area, what is the cost to Oregonians in doing this, and what are the metrics that we're talking about as far as the amount of money we spend and what we get for that? I know this came up with low-carbon fuels. You know, what are Oregonians going to be paying for, and what is the value that they'll be paying for?
You want to go first?
I can start. Thank you. Again, Angela Crowley-Cook. Vice Chair Rayfield, Representative Barreto. That's a great question, and I think that from our side, it seems like the cost of inaction is rarely accounted for, and the benefits of action are not accounted for. I think, you know, in the legislature, we focus on fiscals because we have to, but it doesn't important. Always incorporate the whole cost of doing something and of not doing something. And so I think we're looking for a more comprehensive cost-benefit analysis, not just the price tag of a particular action, but what is the cost of not doing that action, and what are the health benefits of taking that action. And those things aren't always accounted for.
Yeah, follow up,
please.
So, but we still haven't addressed, I mean, what you're saying is we're still looking for an answer then as far as the value, what we get for what we do. I mean, nothing that you have said has given anything definite. It just says, seems from our perspective or our point of view, that's kind of vague. And so am I understanding that you want to put this thing together so that you can get some better numbers and get some better metrics as far as what we actually do and what the value is to Oregonians?
Vice Chair Rayfield, Representative Barreto. I mean, if we think about, like I said in my first line, climate change is determined a national security threat by the Pentagon. I mean, there are some real risks, both financial, health, to our society as a whole, of not acting on climate change. And so we know the cost of some of the programs we've undertaken. Energy efficiency, for example, is very cost-effective at reducing greenhouse gas emissions. In terms of reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation sector, the Clean Fuels Program is a very effective way of doing that. So I think, you know, from our perspective, we're taking a big picture look. It's good for Oregon. It's good for our national security, our health, to take actions on climate change. And, you know, perhaps one of the things that this board could do would be to look at the cost-benefit analysis. But we want that benefit to include things that aren't always accounted for, like health benefits and the cost of doing nothing.
If I might add to that, Vice Chair Rayfield and Representative Barreto, the overwhelming scientific consensus in the community is that climate change is real and we need to do something and take action. The question of what is the cost of climate change is really only half the question. The question is, if you say what is the cost of climate doing something about climate change, the ancillary question that doesn't get asked, that needs to be asked, is what's the cost of doing nothing? The cost of doing nothing, I put forward, is actually substantially more than the cost of addressing climate change. Let me give you a few examples. In the Bay Area, I recently did a study in my professional work about the impacts of climate change on the Bay Area and the water, wastewater infrastructure. With the sea level rise, San Francisco International is underwater, Oakland International is underwater, 880 and 101, the two main freeways, are underwater, as well as almost all of the water, wastewater infrastructure is underwater by the year 2100. What's the cost of fixing all of that? It's in the trillions of dollars. I was just back east in New Jersey, and in Newark, the fifth largest wastewater treatment plant in the country, as a result of the storm surge and the rise in sea level that came at it because of Sandy 4 years ago, they are building a 2,900 linear foot wall all the way around this plant, putting a 30 megawatt power plant inside the wall with pumps to pump the water out because they know it's going to breach. That's a quarter of $1 billion to do that. So the cost, we have not done a very good job of estimating the cost of adapting to climate change. So the second half of the question's not been asked. The other part, what's the cost? Actually, most of the actions that we take and the first actions we should take are actually a net benefit to the state of Oregon and to individuals. They're doing things smarter, cheaper, better, and faster. And those things result in net benefits to Oregonians. There's a thing called the McKenzie curve, which shows for the country, that shows a full two-thirds of the actions we take are a net benefit to people, and we should do those first. In Oregon, we did the same thing on a kind of a gross basis. But what we need is not just to rely on those kinds of things, but we really need a plan. The Oregon Global Warming Commission was supposed to kind of come up with that. We had a half a FTE to come up with that plan, so we don't really have a plan of how to do it. Address this. We have a graph that shows here where you could get the savings from, the reductions in climate change, and most of those relied on better energy efficiency and more renewables. And then on the second part is the cost of adaptation. We don't really have any data on that. My guess is that's about 5 to 10 times more expensive to do nothing than it is to take action.
All right, Representative Kinnamer.
I guess I more have a comment than a question. It just seems to me that this timing may not be right, and that we have significant expansion of an agency that's facing ongoing criminal investigations. And I just wonder that that's good policy.
Yeah.
Just to put it on the table.
I guess on
Representative
comment. Nelson. Thank you, Chair Rayfield. I guess my concern would be is that if we don't have some place for this commission and the policies that it's generating to live, then it just continues to generate studies, and then we don't bind anybody or any agency within our state to try to do something about those policies. I mean, I would argue that we don't really need much more study. It's time to try to figure out how we're going to do something with all the pretty overwhelming scientific evidence that this is hitting us.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. Couldn't agree more with Representative Nose. Can't deny the fact that there is an issue. However, having served on the Oversight Committee, my real concern is when you talk about data and you talk about the fact that there is a real issue here, you're talking about merging with an agency that has failed repeatedly. And we sat in those committees for a year, and we talked about its mission and its failed mission. We talked about its failed organizational structure, its failed funding streams. We talked about its gaps and deficiencies and its operational structures failing. We talked about it not fulfilling programs. And now Representative Kenmer brings up its criminal issues. We talked about the agency's inability to administer tax credits. We talked about, I mean, all these things. And we spent a year doing that. And we talked about looking at an agency and saying, do we need to, one, have this agency? Two, do we pare it down? Three, what should its mission be? And now we're going to take something that we're saying is so important, and you're going to put that into an agency that is clearly failed. And I don't want to go against the director. I mean, he was absolutely transparent with us, and he put everything out there, and I commend him on the record for that, and I have many times. But I can tell you the data, they don't do data well. They don't manage data well. They told us that. So if it's data that you're wanting to have more of and to do better with, if it's an agency that you're wanting to hitch your wagon to go out and do great things, I don't think you found the right one. So I would have to question why we are doing this. This certainly does not, House Bill 2020 does not fall in with the recommendations that we had that I ever saw coming out of the oversight committee, and clearly has gone a different direction. I guess I would question why we haven't looked at the DEQ or other places. I would clearly be concerned if I was sitting in your shoes thinking I was going to hitch my wagon here.
Representative Holby.
You know, I think that the comments are interesting. You know, the first co-chair recommendation lines up with this bill pretty strongly. Outside of the abolishment of the Global Warming Commission, came to that later on. But to address the whole idea of what the costs are and what the costs of doing nothing are, and why should we be going down this road, this bill is strictly about trying to position the state of Oregon in a place where we get that information, where we get that data. We have an agency that compiles it and analyzes it along with all the other agencies and makes recommendations to us so we can make, you know, informed decisions about where to go in the future. This bill doesn't assume a price on carbon. It could lead us that direction, and it could lead us to a direction of how are we going to mitigate or adapt to climate change, whether it's putting irrigation canals in pipes, or whether it's dealing with the rise in the ocean, or the forest fires that will probably come with increased temperatures and dryness. You know, so I think this endeavor is the right thing to do. Clearly, the Department of Energy has had some legacy problems, and maybe someone inside the agency was corrupt. I mentioned that, you know, we've had other corporations in the world that have had similar problems. Other agencies all have similar problems. I don't know how you protect yourself from illegal activity or criminal activity by crooks. They exist everywhere. I'll point to, you know, Enron. Oregon certainly suffered from that utility as well. I think it's a little unfair to look back 2-3 years and point to, you know, a failure. And I'll point also to the legislature for not giving the proper resources for the agency to actually accumulate data, or the statutory direction on getting that data. I think this is, we have to look to the future and move forward, and I'd really like to move on with the rest of the panels. And
all right, so with that, I'll go excuse the first panel, and then we're going to call it Mike Freese and John Bullis.
Vice Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Freese here on behalf of Associated Oregon Industries and the Oregon Business Association. Collectively, we represent about 1,600 member businesses from across the state that employ about 250,000 Oregonians. We have submitted testimony in the past on House Bill 2020, and we remain concerned even with the Dash 8s moving forward. House Bill 2020A proposes to, amongst other things, create new policy declarations, establish a new energy and climate board, require new interagency coordination, duplicate climate policy development for the state, and abolish the Global Warming Commission. AOI and OBA appreciate the work that legislators have done in looking at how to restructure ODO. However, House Bill 2028 does not represent much of, at least in our opinion, what came out of those work groups and reflects a kind of a broader conversation as we heard around climate. House Bill 2020, as I said, expands ODO, the scope of ODO, and presumably duplicates efforts already undertaken, at least in part by other state agencies like DEQ. The other agencies with similar responsibilities, at least in this bill, do not appear to lose any of that responsibility, and so it's hard to understand whether or not this is actually combining efforts or duplicating. The bill also requires 13 state agencies to report to ODO on climate policies. Many agencies are already struggling with the current workload, constantly asking for additional resources, and this adds yet another issue to their plate, and at this time it seems unnecessary and unwise. The cost of this effort, at least as it relates to ODO, will be done at the expense of ratepayers. We believe general fund is a more appropriate funding mechanism for this work. AOI and OBA have pushed the state to develop common metrics to track the state's climate policies and the impact on greenhouse gas emission reductions. This is something that we've undertaken with a number of legislators and with the agencies for the past, at least since I've been involved, for over 2 years, and have been unable to get, I think, consensus in the building in how to do that. I find it hard to believe that an agency, no matter which agency, if it's ODO or if it's DEQ, that they'll be able to find common ground that all of you in this building would agree is the right metric for making those for tracking those measurements. For instance, are we talking about a dollar spent and a ton of greenhouse gas emission reduction, or is it something bigger than that? Also, based on what I've heard from a number of legislators and now from the previous panel, I think the expectations for this board, including the oversight and accountability to other state agencies or for other state agencies at being accountable to this new board, seems to be an open question and relatively ambiguous. There's, at least based on the testimony from the previous panel, there seems to be this perception that, unlike the Global Warming Commission, that state agencies will in fact have some kind of accountability to ODO as it relates to the state achieving greenhouse gas emission goals and how their policies play a role in that. That has a significant concern for any of us that represent regulated entities and have to deal with different permitting programs and what the role of ODO will be over those particular programs. In the end, our members remain concerned with House Bill 2020A. We would, however, be happy to work with ODO, DEQ, other state agencies, legislature on appropriate agency funding, as well as how to get this work done that would have, I think, all of our interests, and I think as Oregonians are concerned with climate policy, understand what the implications of what current policies are doing, because it's not as though Oregon is doing nothing. We are doing quite a lot. But to understand what should we be doing and what the future looks like for us and for our industries. With that, I am happy to take questions.
Please, Mr. Mullis.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. My name is John Mullis. I'm here this afternoon testifying on behalf of the utilities in opposition to House Bill 2020. Since 2007, the utilities have raised concerns about ODO, both its management turnover and excessive and growing reliance on taxing customers via the energy supplier assessment. The utilities were very active and engaged in the interim committee looking at ODO reform, and on multiple occasions submitted testimony outlining appropriate steps to make ODO a more efficient agency. House Bill 2020, including the Dash 8 amendments, is a step in the wrong direction, greatly expanding ODO's mission and work. And we're very concerned that at this time, ODO is not prepared to take on these greatly expanded duties. On the topic of climate, Oregon DEQ already covers air quality issues, including climate, and they already have a governing commission in place. For the reasons I've stated, we do not believe this agency is the appropriate place to be coordinating climate policy for the entire state. Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
All right, thank you. Questions? All right, seeing none, we are, thank you very much for your testimony. We are going to carry over this bill to tomorrow's meeting. We're not going to work the bill today. Ms. Seiler, is there anything else before we close the...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's nothing more for today. We will be meeting here tomorrow at 3 o'clock, though.
All right, we'll close the work session during the meeting.
At 3 o'clock, though.
All right, we'll close the work session during the meeting.
We will be meeting here